Welcome back. Here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are going to focus a little bit more on the resource sector with our good friend Joe Mazumdar, editor of Exploration Insights. Joe, I want to talk about kind of a trendy thing that has been covered a fair bit for the resource sector, and that deals with the financing environment for resource companies. A lot of people, I think, have heard or at least read a little bit about Kai Hoffman's presentation recently about the lack of funding that has come into the resource sector. But there's this other side of the financing environment that has managed to generate at least some money coming into these companies that deals with charity flow through financings. Now, there's a bit of a nuance to understand exactly how this money comes in and where it gets shuffled. But just as a first comment, can you take us through this trend and what it actually means for the company and for investors as to where the shares end up?
All right, thanks. I would say that, you know, flow through shares and those sort of tax-free incentives to invest in mining companies that the original investor may not care much about the project or the management team. All those risks we look at, they would not care about because they're just looking for a, their motivation is a tax savings. So that's the underlying. And so then when we look at that, we know that Canadian companies, TSX listed or venture exchange listed companies that have assets in Canada, have an advantage over other companies right now who've got assets overseas with respect to getting money, which is a good thing. The problem with the flow-through shares is the person that's buying your shares, again, doesn't care about your company, doesn't care about your project, doesn't care about your catalyst. And therefore, after that four-month hold comes off, they'll be selling it, okay? But if you can organize to have somebody take those shares off their hands, that's a positive so that you don't have that risk after the four-month hold is removed. And so with the charity flow-through, it's an interesting proposition. Like we just saw a really good example with GT Gold. They have that project in Northwest BC in the Golden Triangle, Tatoga, where they're drilling out, you know, the porphyry copper part of it. And Newmont just did a financing, and they were part of the flow through. And so the charity flow through. And so the way that worked is that, you know, high tax burden individuals would invest in the company at $1.50, get those shares, and the company would end up with, you know, less of dilution because the shares they sold it at was like a 60 or 70% premium to their previous close. The investor then, the tax burden investor, would then give those shares, gift them to a charity. And so they get another taxable write-off on the gifting of those shares. The price of those shares would actually be dictated by what the price is the charity sells it to the strategic investor, in this case with Newmont. And so in the end, I figure that might have been a dollar per share. And so what's good for GT Gold, I think it's a win-win situation for all. GT Gold ends up with a much less dilutive financing, raised at $1.50, but they don't take the risk of the four-month hold of an investor who doesn't really care about the company because now they have a strategic investor, Newmont, holding the stock. Newmont gets the stock at, you know, they paid maybe a 10 to 15% premium on the share price. So that wasn't as big a deal as the $1.50. The charity ends up with money, and the investor ends up with a tax write-off not only on the original investment of the $1.50, but also on the gifting of those shares at about $1. So a true win-win situation that is only accessible to Canadian companies with Canadian assets. So we may see more of this, and we have been seeing more of this over the last couple of years.
It's such a kind of convoluted way to raise money, but
yes.
You definitely see that there's that benefit to the companies for raising at a premium. However, for investors, you really do need to dig deeper and understand hopefully where these shares are going, and hopefully they're landing in kind of a strong shareholder's hands. But again, it just speaks to the tough nature of the overall financing environment. However, there is one area of the market that has been financing at least some of these companies, even through some M&A activity. That is more of the Australian companies that seem to have better operations, better balance sheets, and a better stock valuation in overall. Do you think that it's sustainable to still be on the trend of looking at these Australian companies to continue to take out a lot of their North American counterparts? I know you guys were on this trend a year plus ago.
Well, we've been seeing it in our own companies with placements being done by companies like Newcrest. They have been one of the most probably active gold producer out of Australia, and gold and copper producer out of Australia, doing strategic placements and also significant investments. And those strategic placements included Sucre Minerals last year, Mirasol Resources, which we also own. But obviously big ones into Lundin Gold, a significant acquisition recently, $800 million of Red Chris, copper gold asset in the same Golden Triangle area that GT Gold is. So they are putting out a lot of money. South 32 coming in and buying Arizona Mining, significant premium, all cash bid. Northern Star purchasing Sumitomo's Pogo mine in Alaska. And now, just recently, a week ago, we've had a new company, Santa Barbara, out of Australia, plugging a hole potentially in their production profile by the acquisition of the Moose River Consolidated Complex that Atlantic Gold built up over the last several years. So we're seeing definitely a move by these Australians into the Americas. And when I, in the mid-90s, I was with the company MIM, but after I'd left the company, they made a significant move by purchasing a porphyry copper gold asset in Argentina, Bajo del Hombre. And so there was, in that era, that would have been the exception, as most Australian companies would come into the Americas, set up an exploration office, do some work, and then they would find more assets, ounces, pounds, whatever, in Australia. Then they would go back and they would close the office down because G&A was getting high, the cycle was turning, and they would all go back to Australia. But now we've seen a new commitment by the Australians, and I think it basically started around Oceana Gold purchasing Ramarco for their Hale asset. And that was like a mid-tier producer showing the other Australians that they could actually produce gold in New Zealand, in the Philippines, as well as having an asset in the Carolinas, in the States, and be able to manage these time zones. So now, a couple of years after that, we're seeing significant investments into operating assets, showing that the Australians are significantly now committed into growing their base in the Americas, which I think is a big deal.
It is a big deal. And you know what? It has been a nice injection of cash to some of the shareholders of these North American companies, because this cash just hasn't been coming from anywhere else. Let's also talk about a different area that has captured the attention of a lot of investors, all thanks to really one company, but there are two that are exploring. That is in Japan. You just got back from a site visit in Japan. Can you share with us some of the details, please?
Yeah, I mean, Japan is obviously a G7 nation, probably, I believe, the third biggest economy in the world. A lot of good things going for it. The issue has always been with Japan is it seems to be resource poor. It seems to buy all its metals from overseas, and it seems to have all the capacity for the value add, for the smelting, and then producing goods and then exporting them. One thing that they do have is they have a very active geothermal system that produces a lot of potential epithermal deposits. And there hasn't been a lot of exploration in there. But, I mean, once they did do some exploration, they found this mine in the southern island of Kyushu called Hishikari. And Hishikari is run by Sumitomo, I think, Metal and Mining. It produces about, you know, it's a small mine, 100 to 200,000 tons a year probably, but it grades about an ounce. So you've got one mine that's producing about 200,000 ounces a year. Small footprint. You know, you could drive right by it, you wouldn't even notice. So there is potential there, obviously, with to be able to find more of these epithermal systems in an environment geopolitically low risk, but that has been underexplored, you know, for decades. And so now with Japan Gold and Irving coming in, the Japanese government has now allowed foreigners to come in and explore and actually stake their own ground and not require, you know, a joint venture locally with respect to the assets. So we're seeing more investment there. I mean, still starting just with these two companies, but Goldcorp had originally made an investment in Japan Gold, and this year, more recently, Newmont made an investment in Irving. But now, because Newmont bought Goldcorp, they basically have an investment in both right now.
Very true. They do have an investment in both, but you know what? It has been encouraging to see at least some money flow into these stocks. Now, Joe, wrap us up with kind of your overall theme, your overall strategy when it comes to investing still in this sector. I think we all agree it's unloved, it's ignored. The vast majority of stocks continue to drift, and well, that means that they are slowly running out of money. Where are you finding sweet spots, or are you simply kind of sitting on the sidelines with cash waiting for maybe better opportunities?
Well, I guess we're still very focused on the exploration discovery stage, because still in this environment, we've still seen a lot of value add with good drilling results. So we're still focused on that. But again, that high risk, high reward alpha play, you know, takes a lot of work with respect to site visits and also doing our due diligence. But so that remains the focus here at Exploration Insights, but also we like growth. So with the companies that are actually operating, we like growth. We like Sandstorm with respect to the growth that's embedded in not only the acquisitions of royalties that they're making, and this is a segue into the financing issue that we see. Is one thing that we do note is these kind of companies that are doing royalties and buying royalties or streams, this is a deal-rich environment for them. So they get to see a lot of deals. And frankly, as their CEO pointed out, that probably more deals than they have the due diligence capacity to look at. But that's a positive for those kind of companies like Sandstorm, and potentially also for somebody like EMX, that's sitting on a lot of cash as well from their sale of that Malmish copper deposit in Russia. So these kind of companies have their pick of looking at new royalties and streams. So there's growth potential for those. And another one we like with respect to growth in a junior producer would be Premier. The drilling results that they can still get in Nevada with their joint venture with Barrick can still move the stock. It's small enough right now for that to happen. And also they got a couple of developing assets that are going to come into play towards the end of this year and more so the beginning of next year. So those are the sort of things we're looking at as well. So if it is a producing or an operating asset, then we want to see growth. And so those sort of companies we're looking at. But in terms of the grassroots sort of thing, yes, we're definitely focused in on new discoveries as well.
Which, in all fairness, new discoveries have driven the market, but man, those are few and far between, and you really do need to keep those discoveries rolling rather than a couple good drill holes, because everybody is constantly looking for that next drill result. Joe, we're going to wrap it up there. It's great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time and joining us and chatting about still a market that is relatively depressed. However, there are the odd bright spots out there where companies are performing fairly nicely, but across the board, it's still a very tough sector to be invested in. Everybody, thank you for tuning in on this weekend's show. I appreciate all the comments and emails that I get from everybody. Keep the emails coming, fleck@kereport.com, and please be sure to visit the website on a regular basis. Every day I am posting content regarding market moves, not just focused on the resource sector, focused a lot on what is actually mattering in the financial world. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and Joe, have a great weekend.
Great, thank you.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.